Good morning, everyone. I need to hear that you can hear me okay because I don't have the mic. Can everybody hear me okay? Can you just raise your hand if you can? Okay. I'm sitting in my meditation room. I thought this would be a nice place to give the talk. I don't have a mic and an earpiece, so my quality, I'm not sure, I'm not confident on my quality. And then it's been raining, so there's a strong pitter-patter in the room from the rain. But we will go forward. So I want to welcome everyone. It's nice to see all your little squares. I wanted to dedicate this talk. I guess I was thinking about all the people globally who are now suffering with the coronavirus. And especially in my heart center, I wanted to dedicate it to those who are unable to get the kind of health care that they need. May they be comforted. May they find a place of peace and ease. May our gathering dedicate to their well-being. So last week in Sosan's talk, she mentioned the difficulty of transition. And I know as I've aged and also been a part of Clouds and Waters community, I've had more respect for just how difficult transitions are. For some people, it seems a little easier, but for all of us in some degree, transitions are a challenge. And it's easy to get swept away in worry or confusion. And we're dealing with so many transitions today. And when I was thinking about giving this talk, I thought a good topic for us to talk about today would be resilience. So in transition, we feel the pull of our resistance, our karma. And when we think about resilience, it's a characteristic that we associate it with making life easier, a way we can bounce back. The definition of it is to bounce back and to be reconnected with our strength. So I'm not sure if I'm going to accomplish this, but I'd like to at least talk about it within our Buddhist tradition. So always in our literature and in our culture, there's this longing we have to go home or to go back to what is thought of as our home. And last week, Sosan talked about how Dogen had mentioned that really there's a million moments or thousands of moments. And she had a number, but I don't remember it. And in each of these moments is distinct and unique and different than the previous moment. So we can say in a spiritual context that really there is no going back. There's the longing. There is no going back, that we are just moving and changing. So in resilience, I'm thinking we're talking about returning to some center or a place of balance, equanimity in our tradition, not returning to things as they were. And of course, when you think about a spring, or Sam was thinking about bamboo, there's compression And then when that situation has changed or conditions have changed, there's the reaction, and then there's this kind of recentering. And that takes time, and we do it both personally within ourselves, within our being. And then also there's a cultural returning to balance. So there will be changes in our social norms after this. There will be changes in our policy, our government policies. And all this will take time to recenter. But in all of these moments, there is this one moment, the one we're living right now, wherever you are, in your being, in your room, there's this moment that we're sharing on the internet, and it's the place where we can breathe. But it's also the place where we can rest. And for me, this is resilience, a place for resilience. When we rest in the moment in our tradition, we cultivate our access to being. And it turned out that of all of the things that I wanted to talk about, cultivating being is where this talk led me. So we're lucky, each of us, in some way, because when I reflected on it, all spiritual traditions talk about the infinite and that, in fact, we are infinite. And to be infinite is to be part of all things in the 10 directions. And we cultivate this awareness of being connected in the 10 direction through the very spiritual practices that we are doing. But in our tradition, our practice is Zazen. We talk about it a lot, we practice it a lot, we give a lot of instructions around it. But in Zazen, we practice sitting in meditation and experience being. And in being, we welcome each moment. Though we cannot comprehend it logically in our minds, we can experience it in our bodies, in our body-mind. It's when we think about our Zazen, in the Fukan Zazengi, it says, I practice Zazen, which is not sitting meditation, but is simply the gate of joyful ease. So it's not just our meditating, that's not the being. The being is the joyful gate, the gate of peace and ease. So when we are able to do this, to be fully present, fully aware of the moment, we are outside our logical brain or our thinking mind. It's not that the thinking mind isn't part of us, but we are not, we are something part of something much bigger. And I'm thinking of this as the meaning of liberation. So as we're sitting, like just now while we were sitting, I got tossed away. I got tossed away by a strain in my back. I got tossed away about worrying about what this will be like giving a talk on Zoom. And then I came back and I fully inhabited my space. And if we get tossed away, we can always tell what that's like because we get onto a project or a judgment or a worry, and we get cultivated, we get spinning around in our mind. So I'm going to show you this image, and I'm going to put it on the screen, and then just in your own mind, I want you to just think about what you saw. What did you see? So I'm just going to hold this up for a minute, and then you can tell me what you see. That was pretty simple, wasn't it? So for most of you, you saw a black dot. And for some of you, you might have said, thought, a black dot on a white sheet of paper. And for some of you who are familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh's teaching, you might have thought, he often holds up a white sheet of paper and says, I see trees and soil and sun and the rain. And he connects it to the whole universe. When I was working at the hospital and somebody would get a terminal diagnosis, when they got that diagnosis, all they could see was the black dot. Oh my gosh, what will happen to me? How will I be able to make it to some goal like my daughter's graduation or the birth of my first grandchild? All they can see is the downward spiral of that diagnosis. And they often lose context, or they lose connection to their whole being. Or in this case, in that image, the white paper. And this is pretty true. I mean, culturally, when we open the newspaper or the news, whatever we're getting for news, we're pretty involved with coronavirus. Coronavirus now is our black dot. And when we are not connected to our wider being, we can feel very vulnerable. We live in a place of scarcity. So then we have the run on toilet paper or alcohol as a way to protect ourselves from this vulnerability. But in the world of being, when we cultivate being, we have access to all of it, the black dot and the white paper. We live in a place of abundance. And in this place is our equanimity and our resilience. When we practice being, returning to being, there is just so much there. Being is not nothing or not doing nothing. It's about being. When we are fully present and aware of our thinking, our bodies, our environment, we are also aware of our infinite nature. And this is the place of real strength and resources. It's like where I get my nourishment, where creative possibilities exist. Here we can rest and establish our upright doing. When Sam's my husband, and I were having a conversation, he said, I guess if we could fully accept impermanence, we would not be bothered by this, the the coronavirus and all of its implications. And I thought about it and I agreed. But later I was thinking, hey, wait, we inhabit a physical body and a physical mind. And there's a limit to these things. And so in some ways, we will always kind of be caught in what our capacity is to change, to flow with impermanence. Sometimes it can be very fast and difficult and rocky for us, and sometimes it's very slow and easy. But impermanence is a concept which is in our mind. And something out there in this concept is changing, and we are changing. But our teachings also say there is no changing. So this is the world of absolute, the infinite. So maybe to be resilient is to be part of the flow of no changing and changing. So it's kind of the dialogue between the black dot, whatever is at work for us, and also the no changing, the infinite nature of our connections, of our being. So I found myself this week, Sam was on a board meeting, and the person leading the board meeting said, to kind of introduce for a check-in, said, well, what are you doing with all your extra time? And I was finishing up something, and I could overhear some of the conversations, and it went something like, well, we're cleaning out our basement. Finally, we have a chance to clean out our basement or go through the filing that I have been meaning to do for years and I haven't done, or other tasks. And I began to get a little worried because I thought, what about beauty? What about creativity? What about play? These are things that are healing for us, not just getting our projects done. So I slipped Sam a note and I said, for Pete's sake, pick something fun. And I began to notice that as I talk to people, I just like, make sure you're bringing nourishment into your day. And part of that I realized when I thought about what I was saying, playing and beauty, generosity, that all of these activities require some connection to the white paper or the infinite nature of being. When I think about that, when I was thinking about that and preparing this talk, it occurred to me that to go to Dogen, who's at which I always considered a little dangerous in Dharma talks, because he can get so confounding that actually you don't hear anything. But for my own personal inspiration, I went to Uji, and some of you are familiar with Dogen's fascicle Uji. Or the U, is existence, or maybe the phenomenal world. And G is time. So Uji gets translated as existent time, or sometimes they translate this as being time. So in it, he says, time is already just existence, and all existence is time. So time, what we think of time, is just existence. So time is part of the phenomenal world. We are time. And all existence is time. So together, without existence, there's no time. And without time, there's no existence. It's kind of part of that, the working dynamics of the universe. But this is not how we generally think of it. We think time is linear. So there's a past time. There's the time we are experiencing and a future time. But here Dogen says that all phenomena is time. You are time. Phenomena is infinite, and you are actually infinite. Time doesn't exist in the past. That's our memory. And it doesn't exist in the future. Time is only what we are experiencing right now. Wherever you are, in your whole being, in your whole environment, that's being and time. That's the only place time and being exists. So when you think about it, you have always existed, not in the form you are, but you, your energy, your particles have always been part of the universe and always will be. I know one time we went to the observatory in Chicago, and they were telling us all these facts about the stars and the billions and millions of years. And they said, and the stardust and this material has been expanding for millions of years. And in our bodies, we also have a mineral that is part of the stars. And for some reason, I just thought that was so fantastic and so beautiful that in each of us is a speck of stars material, elements that are only in part of the stars. But usually we think of ourselves as very limited and very small. So Dogen goes on and says, the 16-foot golden body is time itself. And because it is time, it has the resplendent brightness of time. So the 16-foot golden body is the Buddha. It's one of the characteristics, the 32 characteristics of the Buddha. So we could say this sentence, the Buddha is time itself. And so Buddha, and I often feel this way, is present with us, is part of us. We are not separate from Buddha. We're not separate from resplendent brightness of time. It is part of who we are. And this 16-foot golden body, I don't know about you, but I can't help but think of it as miraculous. It is as miraculous as time. I don't know how time works. I don't know what it all means. But I do get the sense of the miraculous. And we're part of the miraculous. But sometimes I can see this, and of course, sometimes we are blind to it. I am blind to it. Dogen goes on to say that in 12 hours, we can experience this very differently. So in a 12-hour period, we might be very relaxed, and it could be very drawn out, it could be very boring, and our sense of 12 hours could be very, 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 very long. And sometimes when we experience 12 hours, it is incredibly fast, like that. Something immediate happened, required all of our attention. We focus in, we're dealing with it. We look up at the clock and it's 12 hours later. And yet, it cannot be measured, and yet we call it 12 hours. So there's this ticking of the clock, measuring time, dot, 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 dot. And there's this experiencing of it, which is can be very different. And then he says, the coming and going of 12 hours leaves traces. And it's clear. And we do not doubt it. We see the traces of it everywhere. Our car that's out on the street was there yesterday. It's there the day before. There's been this passing of time. And that was then, and this is now. And then he says, we do not doubt it. We do not doubt it, but we do not know it. And I think here, in the knowing is the being. And not that we know it with our minds, but we can participate in it. So when I first read this sentence, it was kind of fun because I read it as, we do not doubt it being time. We do not doubt time, but we do not know it. And I read it the first time as the phenomenal time. We do not doubt the ticking of the clock, but we don't know it. And I thought, this is true. But the second time I read it is, we do not doubt it, time being the absolute, the entirety, the infinity, but we do not know it. And I thought, that is true too. So, there is a knowing, but we do not totally know it. That's the grasping nature. So we can't grasp it, but we can participate and be it. He points out that our remembering of time past is not the same as being in the time. And then he says, this doubting is in fact time. Now that's a classic Dogen for me. So our remembering, our thinking about time is not the same as being in the time. All existent things and all existent phenomena are time. So, this is a place of very expansive way of thinking, very expansive. The ordinary mind hears existent time and thinks. This is Dogen, by the way. Ordinary mind hears existent time and thinks. Sometimes I became an angry demon with 3 heads and 8 arms. And sometimes I became a 16-foot golden body of the Buddha. I thought that was very fun way to say I get angry. That's how I feel. 3 heads. And don't we sometimes feel like the golden body of the Buddha? But what he's pointing at here is we think of this, what he's starting to talk about is we think of these as separate times. Sometimes I'm angry. I'm an angry demon with three heads and eight arms. And sometimes I am a 16 golden body of the Buddha. Sometimes it is like crossing a river or climbing a mountain. The mountain and river may still exist over here, but now I've crossed them and I'm living in a jeweled palace with crimson towers. The mountains and river are distant from me as heaven and earth. This is the way we typically think of things, not maybe the jeweled towers, but that this is over here, and now we are sitting in front of our computers, doing listening to a talk by Fish, and we're here. But to think this way makes us vulnerable. And that, according to Dogen, is not accurate, is not how reality really is. So today we might think, yesterday, when there was no virus, I was not bored or scared or hyper alert. But today, because we're living with virus, the coronavirus, we have these things. I am isolated. I am worried. I am working with anxiety. But Dogen warns us that, quote, but true reasoning is not like this. When I was climbing a mountain or crossing a river, I was there. I was in time. I was being time. Then there must have been time in me. And I actually exist now, so time could not have departed. So this moment now was there then, and it is still here now. So time is with him then, and time is with us now. So this time is infinite. Or we, beyond our imagination anyway, I can't imagine what it would have been before time. And I actually exist now, so time could not have departed. If time does not have the form of coming and going or leaving and coming, the time of climbing a mountain is the present as time being or existence time, which is just existent time itself. So without our thinking about it, it just is. It is itself, part of reality, part of our experience. So before the coronavirus, we might have thought, today I am secure. I know who I am and what I'm about. But if we do not incorporate the true reasoning that Dogen is talking about, we don't see that we are also bored. We are also scared and worried. This is part of being a human being. It is part of our very nature. And if we don't acknowledge that, this is how we can easily get knocked off our center. Reality appears as how we are feeling in the moment instead of the expansive nature of who we really are. We get trapped in our black dot and we try to secure and survive and maintain whatever that is, whatever that black dot is for us. And we don't then have access to our total wisdom. Nor do we have compassion around it. Because we don't, we aren't open to it. This expansive nature suggests that we have a choice of how we want to be experiencing this moment. So we can be experiencing this moment with our anxiety, with our worry, and also with our infinite nature. Being with all that is, just as it is. The truth of what is. This is a place of great strength and resilience. So although in resilience we are able to integrate the current condition, the black dot, we are also aware of our infinite nature, the white paper. And this integration of the one moment with the infinite moments, I realized was the, for me, the intimate moment. This is a place where I felt great intimacy. Yes, we are changing. We are evolving. And yes, we have always been here. We are always present. So I thought about that and I thought, well, sometimes I don't always have access to this. And I went and I thought about our tradition. And I thought, well, though I often feel closest to this intimate moment when I'm doing practice and certainly doing Zazen, I feel that connection. But sometimes I get tossed away and life becomes too much and I get overwhelmed. Now I'm beyond my capacity and I'm compressed. And I feel that pain and the struggle and the suffering of that compression and that resistance. And I thought, well, what does the tradition, what have I done in the past that I would like to share with you today? So in our tradition, our ancestor tells us that when we are overwhelmed, we can call for help. Actually, we do this very naturally. When we are suffering or beyond our ability to bear it, our ancestors promise us that if we in earnest call for help from the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, they will come. And there are stories, I know Katagiri told a story about, he must have been, that they had to be part of a military exercise of some sort in his youth. And he said that they were out in the field and they were going through some training exercise and an explosion went off. And nobody knew what it was or what was happening. And because they were training for war, maybe some of them went, oh my gosh, you know, are we in war? And he said, he crouched down and he said, Buddha, save me. And he, article or in the story, he said, up to that moment, I had never called on Buddha to help me. I'd never thought to do that. I'd never believed in doing that. And yet there I was calling for Buddha at my most vulnerable moment. And at our most vulnerable moment, I'm having trouble saying that word today. It is quite natural for us to call out for help. But the ancestors promise us when we do this, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas will come and they will comfort and help us in this suffering and distress. And I thought, how could this be? How does this work? Or isn't this just a nursery rhyme, something for children to hold on to? But in contemplating Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, we align ourselves with infinite beings. We align ourselves with the infinite. Beings that are outside of our measuring, limited, and logical minds. Our minds that are captivated by the fascination of the black dot. And we open our door to the miraculous 16-foot golden Buddhas. And we see these possibilities. I remember I remember when I was at the hospital, and there was a time I worked in the women's care, so that it was infant, and it was a level one. So there were often infant deaths in that ward. And one week in particular, it was very, very difficult and very distressing. And there was so much suffering that my heart physically ached. And I remember lying in bed one night and I thought, I felt like my heart was being shredded. And I thought, I can't stand this. I can't hold this. This is too much suffering for my heart to hold. And I called on Avalokiteshvara. Just like Katagiri, I didn't know what to do. I was beyond knowing what to do. My logical mind, fix-it mind, couldn't solve it. So I called on Avalokiteshvara. And in that moment, I pictured myself climbing a ladder. And I took my heart and I hung it up on this pink wall. It wasn't really a wall. It was like more like a cloud, a warm cloud of various shades of pink. And in my dream or in my thinking, I thought, where am I? And the answer came to me, you're in Avalokiteshvara's heart. You're hanging your little itty-bitty heart in the vastness of Avalokiteshvara's heart. And I realized, of course, who is Avalokiteshvara, but all of us, all of our hearts. And in that moment, I could see possibilities. I could see outside my suffering. I often think about this story, and I know I've talked about it a lot in my Dharma talks, but to me, it's like the caterpillar that dreams of becoming a butterfly. When we are at our most vulnerable, the bonus or the benefit is we are mush. We are in our cocoon, and we are outside of our limited framework, because it doesn't work for us anymore. And here is a place or the opportunity to dream of becoming a beautiful butterfly. There was there's kind of like a manifesto that many of the nonprofits in the Twin Cities have adopted. I should really I would like to pass it around. I was going to send it to Sosan, but I just haven't done it. But in the manifesto, they dream of what our communities could be like. The world will no longer be the same as it was. After coronavirus, there will be space for things to shift and change. And we have an opportunity to imagine a very different world. We have a chance to imagine a butterfly. If we don't take this chance, we could get trapped in our fears and have more restrictions, more fear, more confinement, and live an even smaller life. And I think about that, that possibilities, both of them exist right now. It's crisis, right? And in a crisis, there's opportunity and there's danger. And I would just like to call out to us that being connected to our infinite nature, we have a much better chance of a butterfly than if we are living in our fear. Buddhas and bodhisattvas want to help us. They love and care for us. Even if it does not make sense to you, they will appear. And I know from talking with several people in our Sangha that there are stories like that out there. People have stories of calling out and having the Buddhas and Bodhisattva appear in this moment. I hope that you, if you have a moment like that, that you share it with people, especially now, to share those Buddhas and Bodhisattva moments. They're very strengthening. And the whole universe appears with the dot. So I'm going to close this talk with a poem or something that I actually read in the Sangha several times, but I still get a lot out of it. It's by Mother Teresa. What to do in darkness, or what to do in transition, or how to be resilient. And she writes, go slowly. Consent to it, but don't wallow in it. Know it as a place of germination and growth. Remember the light. Take an outstretched hand if you find one. Exercise unused senses. Find the path by walking it, not imagining, not thinking about it, but walking it. And here's a real important one. Practice trust. And then watch for the dawn. So that's my talk for today. I think there's time for questions and answers or comments that are striking people. I'd like to open it up. So you have to hit your mic that's in the bottom left-hand screen if you want to, if you have something you'd like to share with the group.
So, hi, I'm Stephanie. and I'm not from Minnesota. You guys have never met me, but I found you online. I just want to say thank you. And also, when you held up the picture, I saw like a portal. And I'm wondering, you know, like a portal to go through, kind of like going from one world to another, which I think is pretty deep. But since you're, you know, the teacher here, I'm wondering what you think about what I saw. Does that mean my state of mind is pretty good? Because sometimes, I'm in a foreign country right now. I'm stranded in South America. So there's a lot more uncertainty. And I'm in a country that's developing. So if I do get sick, and there's going to be problems. So I don't sit around obsessing about it, but I was just curious that because I saw the portal from one world to another. I don't think it means I'm going to die. I think it's a positive thing. I'm just wondering what you thought.
Well, Stephanie, first of all, I just want to thank you for joining us. How wonderful. And it feels like a portal just having you with us. You know, whatever you see, that's what you see, and you make the most of it. That's part of your, you know, being creative and being. It was just a tool for me to use for part of my talk. I hope that you are also able to see it as a dot, as something that is how our mind works. It was just a demonstration of how our mind works. Our brain is constructed to help us survive. And we need that ability to focus and concentrate on that dot to help us figure out and strategize and, you know, take care of ourselves. But it's not all of us. It's not reality. It's not all there is. So a portal certainly works, and I'm going to remember that if I ever do this again. So thank you.
Ish, we probably should wrap up now.
Oh, no. Okay.
No, that's okay. All right, so we'll do the closing chant, and then we'll do three bows, the closing chant, and I'll do announcements afterwards. The closing chant.